Hey everyone, welcome back to Beyond the Bedroom. I'm so sorry I had to skip last week. I was sick, but I'm back, even though I do sound a little bit sick still, so bear with me. But this one is a bit of a mix. It's a little bit of a miscellaneous episode. I'm going to be talking about the news, of course, my New York trip, and answering some listener questions, including a real juicy one about sexual chemistry with someone that you're not expecting it with, and why that happens, and we're going to work through it. So it's going to be a great episode. Some fun stuff, some serious stuff. Here we go. So yeah, last week I was in New York and I, of course, got some fun little packages while I was there. It's actually so funny because this week I am reviewing a sex toy for a friend that is developing it. And I'm not going to say too much about it because I'm not sure how much I'm supposed to reveal. So I'm going to check in with her before I do any of that. And I'm definitely not going to reveal anything about the toy itself that's like more confidential. But I think it's so fun because in the past when I've reviewed toys, I've been sent something and then I give like my honest feedback, more of a consultant type thing. But this time it's just straight up tester. So it's really fun. It's a really great thing that I get to do. But the funniest part is that I have to strap on a heart monitor. And when I was younger, I had this issue where I had this heart murmur and they were trying to figure out like why it had suddenly started. And so I had to wear a heart monitor sometimes. And I remember the person I was like hooking up with at the time being like really aware of it. And because back then it was like more clunky, you know? And luckily now it's like super thin. You barely even notice it. You would not be able to tell if I was wearing it under clothes, but it brought me back to that time and I thought it was just really funny. But yeah, I went to New York. I got some fun things. I went to Contact Sports down on, on Mercer and Grand in Soho. It's really cute. It's a really pretty store. I really, really love the interior. When you walk in, it doesn't really feel like a typical sex toy store. It looks kind of like a mix between a locker room and like a sports bar kind of, but an upscale one. And it looks really beautiful because there's all this like sports memorabilia around. And I guess their whole theme is like, you know, contact sports, like sex is, I guess, a contact sport. And it was really cool. They had great products. Of course, they had Maud and Lalo, they had Foria and some other cool stuff. I got the Champs condoms over there. I haven't really given them a good go, so I really want to try them out. I wrote my whole condom guide on my newsletter a few weeks ago. So I was like, I'm always looking to try new ones. I've had a couple condom companies reach out to me. And it's so funny because I'm like in this long distance relationship. So I'm like, okay, gotta really put him to work. like we're not having sex for fun, okay? Like I need to have my notebook out. Just kidding. It's not really like that. But in my head, I'm like, how am I gonna get through all of these? Like you guys are really overestimating how much sex I'm having because, you know, but I test them out in other ways, of course, but I think it's more fun to test them out the way they're meant to be used, you know? And I also went to Babeland, the one in the Lower East Side. I love Babeland. The two girls that worked there were so cool and helpful, and I loved it so much. But the reason I love Babeland so much is also a personal reason. It's actually the first sex toy store I ever went to. So shout out to my high school boyfriend for bringing me there. The one in Brooklyn, of course. I'm actually writing about that right now, but I just really appreciated that he did that. It just was like such an affirming experience for me. It was just so amazing, and I loved it. All I bought was a flavored Sliquid lube. I remember it was the pomegranate flavor. I remember all about it. But just being able to be in there, seeing everything, and mostly just the affirming feeling of like, there are people who enjoy this. Because I, unfortunately, was going to high school in this place that was very, I don't want to say repressed. I'll say reserved. It was a little bit difficult for me to be myself, be openly buy and not afraid to go to the store and like buy condoms because I was like having sex. It was just a very weird experience because my friends in New York City, they were all having sex and like they were on birth control and like it wasn't a big deal. And then my friends in this little little tiny spot in Connecticut, like right outside of the city, were not talking about it. They were really up in arms about it. And like everyone was doing it, but it was like you just couldn't express yourself. You couldn't. And like, I won't go into it. This is like a story I've talked about in really early episodes of this podcast, and also just stuff that I have definitely a lot more work coming out about. But going to Babeland always reminds me that there's more to it. And then, you know, 10 years later, almost, you know, give or take, I'm in this industry still. And then 10 years later, you know, I was working as a manager of a sex toy store, which I thought was really crazy that just kind of happens. And I've also now been in this field for a decade. I started in some capacity when I was 18, and I'm 28 turning 29 now, and it is crazy to think that I've been in the sex ed sphere, the field, for 10 years. But anyway, like I said, I went to Babeland, love them, and I got this new sex toy. It's not like new on the market, but it's new to me, from Jeju, which is French. Isn't that French for Jeju? Yeah, like I'm playing, right? Someone fact check me on that. But and it is called the Duet. It's the multi-surface bullet vibrator. So it is the size of maybe, it's like the length of my middle finger, which doesn't really help you. Hold on. It's like a couple inches long, and it is thick. I have a photo of it on my Instagram in my last carousel that I posted, just like swipe to the end. But what's interesting about it is it has these like little nubs of silicone, which is kind of fun because I'm not really a texture girl. I'm not really super into it. It doesn't really do that much for me. Some people like love it. They are just into all those little like nubs and ribs and all that stuff. For me, it's like it doesn't really make that much of a difference. So I'm just kind of like, eh. But this is really great. It was like the nubs on one side, and then the other side is flat, which I was not expecting because you can only see one side on the box. But it's great. It's really rumbly. I thought it was going to be super buzzy. I don't like buzzy toys. They're more like topical. They kind of just make me irritated. They irritate my skin. This one's rumbly, has those deep vibrations, and I love it. I was in New York for some family stuff, and then also it was Cecilia Gentile's funeral. I talked about her in a previous episode. But you may have seen that it caused a little bit of commotion online. At first, there was a lot of press about the funeral itself. And then, of course, there has been some press in a negative light, which is very unfortunate, about the archdiocese. Someone tell me how to say that. I did not grow up Catholic, but I attended quite a few Catholic masses because of people who were Catholic around me. It's like that thing where you like sleep over at your friend's house, and then in the morning they're like, you're coming to church with us. And you're like, oh, is my mom not coming to pick me up? And they're like, no, she's coming to pick you up after church. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. What do? I have to like take a sip of this wine? Okay, yeah, cool. I did not like go to church growing up, but I attended lots of different churches and synagogues, obviously, too. So I actually, even in high school, went to a mosque for a service. So I think it's really interesting. I've kind of dabbled a lot. And then obviously my family's from a Christian country. They're from Iceland, which has a national church and is Lutheran and is more of like it is secular in terms of its politics, but it does have a very modest Lutheran and reserved culture. Not too dissimilar from some of the more reserved waspiness that I went to high school during the time of the Babeland story I just told you, but I digress. Yeah, it's been kind of wild to see the, I don't know how to even describe it, the pushback, I guess, or the lashing out that happened. If you have been reading those articles, let me tell you, I was in attendance. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I was in attendance. I was pretty close to the front. I saw everything, and I thought it was just such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful funeral. Billy Porter opened with a beautiful hymn. It was just beautiful to see that there were so many people there for Cecilia. It was packed, and the priest even made a joke like the only other time it's really this packed is on Easter Sunday. And then like we all kind of stood up and clapped for the community. Like, wow, like packing St. Patrick's Cathedral. Like, that's crazy. And we were clapping, and then he gave this like thumbs up, and he was really excited. And then it was just so beautiful. It was just so beautiful to see the different communities this woman touched and led. And actually, I'm not going to spend too much time on it. I think there's so much to be said, and I'm not going to do it justice right now. Obviously, it's still kind of raw for me, all of this, but I'm choosing to remember her as like the funny, fun-loving, extremely passionate person who activated a community. And what I saw that day at that funeral was community activation. It was beautiful, it was memorializing, and it was healing for a lot of people. There was no evil or deceit or hate or shame. And that to me was really beautiful. So of course there's a photo of me ugly crying at the funeral that's published in Vogue online. But the funny thing is, would you believe me if I told you that this is not the first time I'm crying in an international publication? Because the first time was actually in 2013, but that time it was like on purpose. But I just am like, my friend actually who took that photo in 2013 texted me and was like, again, girl. Actually, also, I remember I met one of my great friends for the first time when I was at a shoot where someone was like, oh, can you cry on command? And it was for Mr. Giff. So shout out to Mark and Josh, because I was crying then too. Everyone just wants to see me cry. But that's okay. I'm good at it. I'm really good at it. And Cecilia told me once that I was a pretty crier. So let's just go with it, okay? I've chosen to believe that. But yeah, a lot happened in New York. I was really happy to be there. I was really happy to see my friends, my family. I'm really, really trying to move back. I love DC. It's been great here. And maybe I'll stay. I haven't really decided, but I don't know. Maybe I think it's time to move back home. We'll see. But a lot has happened in the news since I came back from New York. And I was sick, so I couldn't report on this, but now I am. So of course, the biggest story in sexual and reproductive health is that there was the Alabama Supreme Court ruling, and I'm not going to discuss too much of the policy here. I know I have a degree in health and public interest, but I'm trying to keep the podcast more sex ed oriented. So I'm going to be discussing more of the ways that news like this impacts us in our sex lives, because I think people don't always put two and two together. But I do want to talk about it. So yeah, the Alabama Supreme Court ruling that decided frozen embryos are children. And for those of you who are not in the US, just a quick kind of explainer that after this landmark case was overturned, obviously, as you know now, abortion is a states' rights issue. So what that means is this ruling is not necessarily making it a law, but it's setting a legal precedent for the state to create policy based on it, and for also further cases to be decided on based on this legal precedent. So it's like setting an example. It basically was saying that those who destroy embryos can be held liable for wrongful death, and it shows a new way that the state's rights issue of abortion rights can affect how embryos are viewed in the law. And this is from CNN, so I'll read it. The ruling released this month stems from two lawsuits in which three sets of parents who underwent in vitro fertilization, or IVF, alleged that several frozen embryos at a Mobile hospital were dropped on the floor and destroyed in December 2020. So the parents sued for damages, and a trial court originally dismissed their claims, finding that the embryos were not people. But the state Supreme Court ruling reversed that decision, saying that the destruction of embryos falls under the state's wrongful death of a minor law. So this is tricky, right? Because it's like, I'm glad that these people did get justice for their loss. I have had actually multiple people in my life that were doing IVF or donating eggs. They ended up being destroyed either through tech issues, like the cryo chamber not operating correctly, or through human error, like someone dropping them, etc. But they couldn't necessarily get justice in this way, especially not in terms of criminal liability. So the approach to this does concern me, and it concerns a lot of people. We've been hearing about this all week, right? And the reason it's really concerning is because where does this end? Like, Yes, this was the legal precedent for someone destroying an embryo in a lab, but does it also overflow and bleed over to someone who wanted to do IVF with their husband? They get a divorce, and now they don't know what to do with the embryos. One person wants to destroy them, the other person doesn't. Would it be safe to say that Sofia Vergara, for example, she's going through this right now in her past divorce. Her ex-husband is claiming that he wants the embryos and he has a right to them, and he may even put them in a surrogate. It's like, where does Sofia's rights to that embryo, where does that extend to? Like, is it going to be a custody battle over these embryos? It's a very complicated, strange situation, and it is very bizarre how the overturning of Roe and the Dobbs decision has really impacted these things. But how does this impact our sex lives? Obviously, the stress of this news has sent a lot of people into kind of a dread, and especially people that are in Alabama and around states that don't allow any abortion. But I mean, I don't know, it is just a weird feeling. I do have friends in those red states. I do have friends that are in states that have total abortion bans, no exception for rape or incest. And it is in the back of their mind. It is. And this one girl I know, she tells me that even with her copper IUD and a condom, she does still have a lot of anxiety about it. And in the back of her mind, she's like, I don't want to do this. She is on a lot of medication because she has a heart condition. And she also takes anxiety medication. And this is in conjunction with her heart issue. And like a pregnancy would, one, like not work out for her at all, because obviously she has to be on this medication. She can't take the medication if she's pregnant. But two, it's like she doesn't want to have to choose between possible viable pregnancy and not taking her meds, and like taking the meds and harming the fetus. Like that's an impossible situation that nobody wants to be in. And she's proactively doing her best to not, she has an IUD, she's using condoms, she's having safer sex. But obviously, you know, it's like there's like the slim chance. And so she's gotten into this weird habit of being like, just don't finish inside me, even with the condom on. Like, and I'm not saying weird habit as in that's weird. I'm saying she gets in this like weird mindset where she's like, it's no longer enjoyable at the end of the day. When she looks back and she's like, the sex is great until I feel like he's about to come, and I just start getting really anxious. And I'm like, don't do it anywhere near my vagina, please. Obviously, the likelihood of her getting pregnant with those two contraceptive methods is quite low. Like extremely low. Sometimes we have these fears because it's hard to say, well, that won't happen, because it does happen. People may get pregnant still with a IUD because it got like dislodged, and it's so unlikely and improbable, but at the end of the day, it's so hard to tell somebody. That'll never happen if it has happened. So I think that's part of it too. It's like we hear these stories all the time of like, I had an IUD and I still got pregnant, or like the condom broke, I took the birth control pill, I mean the morning after the emergency contraceptive, which is a birth control pill, by the way, and I still got pregnant, and I had to have an abortion. And it does cause people to have this like dread of like, I don't want to put myself in that situation. And I feel like when they share these stories, it's like a anti-choice person's like wet dream. It really is like their wet dream. I guarantee you, it's because like they love it. Like they love hearing this stuff because they're like, yeah, well then you should keep your legs closed and like all this stuff. And trigger warning, by the way, if you don't want to hear about this portion, and this will involve some sexual assault talk, just skip ahead like 5 minutes, okay? But we've seen these numbers, especially the ones coming out of Texas, where it's like an absurd amount, like it's an unbelievable amount of these pregnancies that would have been terminated but have had to go through are a result of rape. So also I'm just like, you know, and you've heard this stuff. I know you have. But you hear the anger and the distress in my voice. It's not great for our sex lives, is it? You know, it's like, it just is one of those things where I say that sexual liberation is more than just being able to, it's just so much more than like having an orgasm or being able to fuck whoever you want. It's so much more than that. Sexual liberation is rooted in a collective liberation, because this is not a sexually liberating act. And they know that. And they love it. They love that. They're like, yeah, well, this is what sex was made for. It's like the return to nature fallacy that we're just seeing all the time. And I see it also seeping into the ways that we talk about sex. There's a lot more talk about like soul ties, this sacred bond between man and woman. And I even see it seeping into other spaces, but it's really visible in those heteronormative and heterosexual spaces. This idea that you are bonded forever. And I got this Instagram comment the other day that made me literally laugh out loud, like an actual LOL, a lol, if you will. And it was some guy, and he was like, well, did you know that when a man ejaculates inside of a woman, the DNA stays there forever and can actually infiltrate her body and like all this crap? And I'm like, why are you guys believing this? Why? Like, it doesn't make sense. That's like saying to me that the DNA of every strawberry I've ever eaten will permanently alter the cells and it will somehow change my DNA and then change my endocrine function to just always, the next time I have a strawberry, just like it won't compare to that first one, or it'll just make me crave strawberries more and more and more. Like, it doesn't make sense. From a biological standpoint, it doesn't make sense. From a physical, purely physiological standpoint, it does not make sense. Microbiology doesn't make sense. Genetics and genealogy, we're not seeing it make sense. You see what I'm saying here? It doesn't make sense. So let's stop with that nonsense because it's crazy. Also, there was something else that someone said the other day, just this is a small tangent, but they were saying that if you come in someone's mouth, the sperm cells will basically swim and swim until they see a wall so they can swim up your nose and go up your brain. And I'm like, first of all, that's not how that works. Suggest you look at a picture of a skull. Not really how that works. Second of all, no, they don't. They get absorbed unless they're in a space that they're kind of supposed to be in. Also, when they hit your stomach, you have stomach acid that kind of takes care of a lot of that. So that's just not how it works. And you're not having, I promise you, you're not having like sperm cells infiltrate your brain. They're not getting through like your blood-brain barrier and inserting themselves into your brain and then later causing you to get like some sort of brain issue. Like, it's the stuff I hear and see online as a sex educator. Sometimes I take screenshots and I'm like, this needs to be studied in a lab, and I send it to someone who like actually studies in like a sociological or behavioral health lab, and I'm like, please, please, just do me a favor. Just please, I need to know what this one is about, because I just can't anymore, you know? But yeah, I think the overturning of Roe is definitely allowing a lot more of this rhetoric to be talked about as if like, well, everyone agrees because that's just the law of the land, which isn't even necessarily true. And every time it's on the ballot, it's not getting through. But let's just skirt right past that. But besides the obvious, like the looming anxiety of unwanted pregnancy, I think this constant discussion of reproductive rights is definitely taking a toll on people. And what I mean by that is, so sex is dependent on obviously things like arousal and desire. Arousal, as you've heard me talk about, is a more of like a biological mechanism that is dominated by things like blood flow, nerve function, etc. But desire, the desire to act on the arousal, comes from a psychological impulse. At least that's a theory that many of us are working with, called the dual control model also of desire, which is like responsive and spontaneous. And I'm not gonna go too far into it, but it is one of those things where some people get the arousal and then the desire. Sometimes it happens at the same time. Sometimes the desire happens and then the arousal happens. It can depend on the day, it can depend on the person, all the stuff, right? But for some people, they're more likely to respond to things like, or rather, I should say it like this, they are less likely to respond sexually when they are bogged down by horrible feelings, negative news, things like that. And some people don't internalize this type of stuff, and some people it really, really bothers them. And this is something I'm seeing, for example, on threads I talk about, like, yeah, I think the next thing on the far right agenda is definitely to be attacking birth control pills. We see this happening, all this stuff. And some people are really emotionally activated and they're like, I worry so deeply about this. And then there's other people, and this also may depend on how much privilege they have in that situation or how much, you know, they can kind of go around these guidelines, because not everybody obviously is impacted by these laws the same way. That's something that should be said. But there's other people where they're like, I don't think that'll really affect me. And for those who, like, it is very emotionally activating, and also all of this news of, like, sexual assault causing pregnancies, and just these horrible stories that people have to go through, and women die, people dying because of this. Like, I think for a lot of us that are in this field, it can also be really stressful. And I'm seeing it also with people who are, like, constant consumers of this news. And it can definitely have a toll on us. I mean, this is all kinds of bad news, obviously, and all kinds of heavy, heavy stuff. And there's a lot of heavy stuff this week in the news, a lot. But when it has to do specifically, like, with your reproductive freedom, I do think that there is something there that weighs down on us a little heavier and does impact our sex life more. And it is something that I do want to discuss more in depth. And I mean, I invite you guys to answer me. I mean, is this news, are these rulings, are they affecting your sex life? How are they affecting your sex life? How has this impacted the way you view sexuality? Are you having less one-night stands? Is that something that's happening? Are you on, you know, a more permanent or long-term method of birth control? What is going on for you? I had a really great discussion a couple weeks ago with someone who shared with me her story about her mission to get her tubes tied. And she wanted sterilization. She had wanted it for many, many years. And she went through a lot of different doctors until she found someone who's willing to do it. And this is something that I hear about all the time. And then on the other side of the spectrum, how many of us are going through fertility treatments? And it's like, none of us are really free from it. That's what I mean by collective liberation here. None of us are really free from this, right? So it does obviously have an impact on a lot of people. And I also wonder about, you know, how it's affecting those who ejaculate. Like, this is obviously, like, you are not the ones who carry the pregnancy, but how is it affecting you? I mean, for those of you who are single that are living in states like Alabama and Tennessee, and how is this something that you're thinking about? Are you starting to ask, are you on birth control? Are you using condoms more? Is it something that's impacting you? Or is it like you were doing all those things before anyway, and now you're just kind of in the back of your mind worried, like, is my girlfriend gonna be okay if something happens during her pregnancy? What would I do? You know, do you have a pregnant wife or girlfriend? Is this something that you guys discuss? I think these are really good things to talk about, because when people think about abortion and states' rights, a lot of the time they think about that it's mostly people who are, like, under 8 weeks that go and they get their abortion, whatever. That's just not the case. Like, that's not what these rules impact the most. You know, it's like, if you're dating somebody who's pregnant and something goes wrong, and because of some archaic draconian laws that exist for such ridiculous purposes, you have to watch them die slowly, you know, or you have to lose your job and go somewhere else. And, like, if you're living in the deep South, we're talking multiple states over. If you're living in the South, like, you're going multiple states north. Like, that's wild to me for some states in the South. But it's like, you might not be able to take time off work. You have to go and find someone in a different state. You don't have insurance in that state. And it's like, Are you thinking about these things? And for the ones who are thinking about it, how's your sex life? Tell me about the last time you had sex. You know, because I think this should be a continuing conversation, and it's something that I'm going to tap into a couple times in the next couple weeks, because I want to hear your responses. I want to talk about this. I think some people may write it off as, like, a frivolous talking point within this discussion, but it is important because it does really limit. I mean, part of a huge reason why the sexual liberation movement blossomed in the 60s and the 70s is because of multiple things. First, it was that married women could access hormonal oral contraceptives, and then years later, single women were allowed to have hormonal contraceptives. And then the Roe decision, you know, there was a lot of other things happening, but these are three big events during those two decades that solidified that, you know, you could own your sexuality, and there's nothing wrong with owning your sexuality. And also being able to protect your body and protect yourself and take control of your life and your reproductive freedom. And these limits on our reproductive freedom. I think that's why we're seeing all these articles too, where it's like, girls don't want to date young boys anymore. Boys are turning more right and girls are leaning more left. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. When I was in high school, boys were really more likely to be conservative and girls were more likely to be left-leaning. But I lived in one of the only red towns in the Northeast, no joke. It's like Jersey, and like so interesting to me because like a lot of the New York metropolitan area, a lot of it is actually super conservative, which is something that a lot of people don't expect to hear. But yeah, us bridge and tunnel folk got a lot of conservatives amongst us for sure. So a lot of the girls that I grew up with were very conservative at the time, and now that I know them, obviously that has changed. Yeah, I mean, it's like, why does that happen? And these are just things that I've really wanted to talk about for a while, and I want more of your input because I don't want to sit here and just get on my soapbox and talk about what I think. I want to hear from people that live in different places and are experiencing this, and let me know. But you know what I'm tired of? Because like on this note, I'm going to just say something I'm tired of that people do to me. When people ask me out of the blue, like, yeah, so what's your take on abortion? And this could be in the DMs or at a cocktail party or when people learn that I'm a sex educator. Obviously, I'm pro-choice. I'm a sex educator. Obviously, I'm pro-choice. I am like, there's just no, it's just unequivocally pro-choice. But I'm not gonna sit there and debate you, especially if you're just some stranger. I don't need anyone playing devil's advocate or asking me about my stance so that they can give me this carefully rehearsed rebuttal. Trust me, I have been in this field, like I said, for a decade now. I know what you're gonna say. I've heard it all. I'm not gonna change your mind. You're not gonna change my mind. I don't need someone to be like, so what's your take on abortion? What do you wanna hear? What do you want me to say that you're gonna be like, well, that's, no, enough. I'm so over that. And obviously it's about having these conversations and not being in the echo chamber, but the devil's advocate, you know, they can stay so far away from me. They can go hang out with the devil. Aren't you advocating for him? Go hang out with him. Tell him I say hi. Apparently I have a room reserved down there according to certain parishioners of a Catholic church in New York that I shall not name at this point. But I digress. So the fun portion of today's class is going to be a question that I saw recently online. And there's been so many different iterations of this question. I'm not going to give credit to the original person in the podcast, but I can post it in my newsletter. So it was, have you ever had crazy sexual chemistry with someone and it surprised you? So I'm just paraphrasing here, but have you? Has there been a situation where you had this crazy sexual chemistry with someone and it was just not what you were expecting, or it was like you weren't really feeling them that much at first and then it really surprised you? There's like so many different ways that this can happen. So my first thought here though was when, and this is a lot of people who are not straight will have this experience where they're like, we're just friends. I'm just really good friends with this person. I just like, we're just really good friends. And then you're like, God damn, like, this is sexual chemistry. Oh, this is sexual chemistry. Oh, I want to do very naughty, dirty things to them. Got it. So that's, you know, that's where my mind went at first, because I definitely have one of those stories. But also, the other day I was thinking, a few of my friends thought I had really strong sexual chemistry with someone. And when they finally told me about it, I was like, what are you guys talking about? Like, I literally did not feel that way at all. I like cringed at the thought of doing anything with them. And that's not me just being like, no, I don't like them. Like, I literally was like, oh my God, no. Like, that is I've never even, like, I was like, I guess, like, I could, but, like, that's not, like, you know, when you're like, obviously, like, this person's, he's okay looking and he's a good guy, but, like, do you know what I mean? It's like, you're like, I could do it, but I'm not, I've never thought about them like that. And you're just kind of like, ugh. So it could kind of go two ways too. It's like, have you ever thought you were going to have sexual chemistry, or has someone else thought you were going to have really good chemistry with someone and it didn't work out? I would love to see those answers too. But in terms of if you've ever had sexual, crazy sexual chemistry with someone, and it surprised you, I think it's interesting why this might happen, right? So sexual attraction isn't always dependent on how aesthetically pleasing we might find someone to be. So they're kind of, they're like, you can look at someone and be like, wow, that's such a hot person, but the sexual chemistry is dependent on other factors. And it may be though that, like, for some people, seeing someone who's super attractive gives them that desire because they feel as though they're receiving that same energy back, and that creates the sexual chemistry. But for other people, desire can be dependent on how they feel in other ways. So sometimes people we wouldn't normally be attracted to, they make us feel emotions that allow for that sexual desired response, I should say. So for some people, I guess this could look like a person that you admire, or someone that makes you feel safe, maybe someone who challenges you, or it could also be the opposite, right? So someone who you're constantly getting into these like bickering matches with or scuffles, or someone that you're like fighting for their attention all the time. This is stuff that can also lead to that intense desire. And when it's matched, it's like this chemistry of like, I want you. I think that's what the sexual chemistry usually is defined as with people. It's like this mutual need for it to happen, or also that you're just so on the same page. It's like you're super in sync during sex, because that could also be the definition, right? It's like they're kind of like reading your mind and you don't even have time to think. It's that kind of vibe. So I'll share some of my experiences and then I'm going to talk about the ones you guys had. But I had this experience with a girl that I used to sit behind. So she used to sit in front of me in class, and I was not doing well in this class. I couldn't focus. Like, I didn't know what was going on with me. I'd never really had this problem. And then I realized it's because I had been staring at her, thinking about her all the time. And the problem was that her and I didn't really get along. I actually didn't really like her. Like, she actually really irritated me. And I thought about her all the time though. Like, I was just like, she's so hot. Like, I want to like touch her. Like, I just want to see what that's like. Like, I wondered, like, what would she feel like? And what would she do if I kissed her? Like, I started thinking these things. Like, I was so attracted to her, but I really didn't like her personality. She came off like really aggressive, and she was really, like, she really irritated me. She really knew how to get under my skin too. And so I was like, oh, that would like not be a good match. Like, I was like, it's not gonna work out. But also I was like kind of coming to terms with it for the first time that, oh fuck, like, am I into this girl? And like, is she straight? Like, I don't know, but I sensed a vibe. I did sense the vibe for sure. But I think one of the hardest parts about being into women as a woman is not wanting to feel predatory or objectifying. So I was into her, but I was feeling really conflicted, and I didn't feel like her personality was something that I vibed with. But if I liked her body this much, then like, wasn't I just as bad as the guys that were doing this? So I don't know, it was really hard for me to kind of move past this. And I thought about it, and then I realized it wasn't just her body. She was super hot and I really, really wanted her, but it's also like the fact that it was kind of unattainable in that weird way. Not unattainable, like it's like it was still within my reach, but it was like just the fact, like, she gave me this attitude, and I know that sounds awful, but it's like, I wanted her, and I wanted her as she was. Like, I wanted that bad attitude, and I wanted her to test me and push me. And you know what? Listen, because I know what you're thinking. This was when I was still in a bit of a toxic era, all right? I'm a healed girly now, all right? I just want to make that clear. But I really just, I don't know, I wanted to make her fold, you know what I mean? So, and she eventually did, you know, it kept insisting to study together, and then we kept getting closer and closer, and then eventually we kissed. And her bad attitude was there, and it was like, she was almost like bratty with it a little bit, but like not, I hate that word, it's so cringe, ugh, gives me the ick. But that like bad attitude like faded during sex, and it turned into this like other thing where she was like dropping it only for me. And that surprised me. I was so surprised at how much I was into that, but also how great that chemistry was, because I was expecting something totally different, and I was expecting it to be kind of like hot, but like kind of like I would have to be kind of like figuring out everything, and she wasn't telling me, and she was like, I don't know what to do, like all that. But it wasn't. It was like she was so, in those moments, she was just like so sweet, and she was just communicative, and the chemistry was so amazing, and she did a really just, I don't know. I don't want to go too much into it, but yeah, that was really surprising to me. And in general, I would have never, because when I first met her and I was first like around her, I was so irritated by her all the time. And it wasn't until like I had to be in close proximity to her that I was like, damn, she's really hot. And then I was like, oh no, but she's so irritating. And then, I don't know, I broke down the shell. I think she was just putting up a front. I think that really surprised me. But I will tell you this story. I also had this happen with a guy that I was friends with for a few years. So we met and then we were just like friends, long distance friends, I guess. He lived far away, not super far, but he moved to New York and we started hanging out more because we were like, yay, we're in the same city. And I thought he was always like really cute, but I never really took him seriously because he was younger than me. And it just, I don't know, it wasn't like, I couldn't see myself dating him. He was just figuring everything out. He was kind of careless. Like, I just didn't see it. But I was like, oh, he's a cutie pie. Like, I never saw him as like hot or sexy. I was like, oh, he's just so cute, you know? But we started hanging out a lot, and we just started doing more stuff together, and we got really close. We started seeing movies together. We started going out all the time, and like with friends, and sometimes just the two of us, we would like watch TV together sometimes. And one time we were just hanging out, watching TV. Like, I think I was like in sweatpants and just like hanging out, and it just happened. I don't even remember like who made the first move. It just like happened. And it was so, it went from 0 to 60 so fast. Like, I was, one, probably severely underestimating him and his abilities. Like, let's be honest. But also, it just, like, nothing led up to it. It just, like, it happened and the chemistry was crazy. And I could tell how bad he wanted it and how much he had wanted it for a while. And I was totally not expecting it. Like, I don't know. I was happy, though. And we ended up hooking up for a few months. And then one time he just kind of, like, dipped out. And he had done that when we were friends. But it was kind of out of the blue. And I called him out on it. I remember, like, calling him and being like, hi, care to tell me what's going on, because I was going through something at the same time too. But we had this like really honest discussion, and then we went back to being friends. But it was hard because we had so much sexual chemistry. We had to like cool it off for a while, and then we became friends again. And it was always kind of there though at the same time, which was hard. But I don't know, neither of us wanted to commit to a relationship, and we were never like super deep friends. We were like the type of like fun hangout friends, so you know the difference? Like, it's like those people that you're like, I'm going to tell you everything. And then there's people that are like, do you want to just like come over and have a drink and like watch TV and like not do anything? He was like that kind of friend. And obviously there's people that are in between that and both, but he was more on that side. But we did stay friends years later, and we've drifted apart a little bit now, obviously, but I still have like a soft spot for him. I was really, 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 really surprised. I didn't think he had that in him. Okay. I was like, who are you? What is this? What is happening? But yeah, here's what listeners had to say about their sexual chemistry. So Julie says, obviously I also changed the names. Hello. Don't even need to say that. But Julie says, I had crazy sexual chemistry with my brother's teammate. Teammate? What was he doing? Is he in the NBA? Just asking for a friend. It was probably because it felt wrong and right at the same time. They had been playing together for 5 years at this point, and I always been into him. It was surprising, though, how intense everything felt. It's like an extra layer of heat. Ooh. Is that like an innuendo? Like, does this man play for the Miami Heat? Because now I'm really just asking for myself, you know? But I've definitely been there, not with NBA players or not with any of my siblings' friends or anything, but with that feeling of, like, it's so wrong, but it's so right, like that type of thing. I think that can be really surprising for people when they haven't experienced it, and then they experience it and they're like, ooh, like, it is true. It's like this, like, extra layer of heat. But obviously, it goes without saying, there are also a lot of, like, negative consequences to that sometimes, especially emotional consequences. You can end up hurting people and hurting yourself. But there's a reason why it feels really great for people. I don't know. Sam says, he sent this in, he goes, I had the most intense, passionate, crazy sexual chemistry with a one-night stand. It totally blew me away. I was traveling and she knew that, but wow, it was nuts. I still think about it 7 years later. Oh, okay. I talk about this with a few of my friends. I've had like really intimate, loving, passionate, like one-night stands. I'm not afraid to admit that, okay? That's like kind of my whole gig, right? Talking about sex. But some people like can't do it, and I understand why. And a lot of the time also it's like you get better at sex and you get more comfortable with people when you have been with them more than once. And then some people it's just like, I don't know, you also have one night stands that are just bad and they're just weird and awkward and awful, but like you make it work, you know? But there's also people who kind of like perform, and it's like performative good because they're afraid of like taking the time to communicate. There's a lot I can say about this. Like a lot, but I won't go into it too much. But in terms of like the performing versus experiencing, because I know it's ad nauseum at this point. Don't worry, there'll be like an entire project dedicated to it at a different point. But one night stands, that can also be like a really surprising, very surprising source of sexual chemistry where you're like, why is this working so well? I barely know you. I don't know. I haven't actually had like, I said like I've had them, but I'm not really super into the idea of like a total stranger. It's like, it's more like a, when I say one night stand, it's like someone that I've gotten to know for a while. I actually had like a great kind of quote unquote one night stand with someone and the sexual chemistry was really great. But I just remember being like, there's something missing. There's something missing. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something missing here. And just out of that reason, I was like, I don't want to do this again. I don't know. It's very interesting. It can just happen. And some people, though, are like, it's very interesting. They're like, I could never have a one-night stand. Like, I need that emotional connection with someone. And I don't want to, like, give you myself and have sex with you if I'm not getting, like, a commitment in return. And that, I know some sex educators will, like, harp on that and be like, no, like, you're thinking of it transactionally. But what I say to people is like, that is your, the way you think about sex, as long as it is serving you, you're allowed to make those calls and make those boundaries. When I talk about sexual liberation, which is something that I've talked about a couple times now in this episode, but I guess it's just on my mind, I don't know. But when I talk about sexual liberation, it is like a collective permission. That's a good way to phrase it. It's a collective permission. Where if you don't ever want to have sex, you are free to do so. You are liberated to do so without shame or judgment or stigma or fear or minimal amounts of that or the resources to work through it if that were to occur, the courage to speak up when that is occurring. If you only want to have sex with one person, as long as it's not rooted in shame or stigma, it's just like, this is something that empowers me. I love this person. I want to only have sex with them. I love our sex life together. It's communicative. It's explorative. It's, you know, that's great. If you're the type of person who likes casual sex and doesn't necessarily need emotional connections, as long as you are not doing so in a way that harms yourself, you're not engaging in reckless or out of control sexual behavior, you're not engaging in compulsive sexual behavior, if you are enjoying your life, you're having a good time, you are respecting yourself and you are showing up for yourself and you're making choices that serve you, that is what the liberation is. And I know for some people it sounds like utopic, but it's not. Like, it's possible, and there's people that do this because they're sexually liberated, because they take responsibility for their choices, they take care of themselves, and they take care of their sensual and sexual self. And they engage with partners that they presume will do the same. And obviously, mistakes happen and things happen. And then ultimately, it's up to you to say, this is something that happened to me. It's not because I'm a bad person. I'm not being punished for having sex. This is something that happened because it was violent or because it was uncalled for or whatever it was, you know, or because it was a, a boundaries issue. It was a communication issue. But you're not saying to yourself, I deserved it because I'm having sex, or I'm a bad person because I'm having sex. Or like we talked about in the beginning, it is my duty and my punishment to put my body through something that I don't want to because I had sex. There is no moral assignment to it. You're engaging in a behavior with other people or with yourself that is actually free from a moral designation in reality. But like we've constructed these moral assignments. And that's where it gets really complicated. The public perceptions of how we act and the public perceptions of how we show up as our sexual selves really impact us. And that's why things like, you know, the news impact us. That's why sometimes we have sexual chemistry with someone and we're like, that's not who I'm supposed to be attracted to. It all kind of is impacted by it. So thanks for listening to this little mixed bag episode. Sexual chemistry is such a fun topic because it is so individual, it's so subjective, but it's also based on these principles of desire, of a responsive desire, or of that relationship between your biological arousal, your physiological response to sex, and then your decision to act on it. And I think that that is something that when it matches up to what another person's intention is, it can just be so great and passionate. And I hope also, if you're the type of person, by the way, who is like, I don't really relate to this, this is not the same thing as, and actually I do want to make this very clear here at the end. Let me just say this. Passion and sexual chemistry, right? A lot of people confuse and mistake this as like when they're in a very toxic relationship and this is the only time that they're getting their needs met, or they're feeling validation, or they're getting affection, it might feel really, really, really good. It might feel like we have a lot of sexual chemistry. But when you take a step back, you don't actually have sexual chemistry. You are just on cloud nine because you're getting whatever it is, the attention, affection, validation, whatever it is from that person. If you are performing, actively performing during sex and not showing up as your authentic self, then it's not always chemistry. It's like you're just passionate because you're pretending to be. And that's different than like showing up for yourself in sex. And for some people, sexual chemistry is not this like fireworks thing. And it's more of like a calming, grounding thing. And that's what I've also experienced with people, where the chemistry was passionate. And that's what I was talking about earlier with like, it's like they're reading your mind, but you don't have time to think. It's like that kind of thing, because you're in a rhythm together. You might have like your eyes closed, mouth kiss, like tongue kissing the whole time, and you're like going with the flow and you're guiding them and there's body language, and that might be a really great sexual chemistry. But then another time I had really great sexual chemistry with someone and it surprised me how good it was, or it surprised me that it was that person, is because I was able to ask for what I want. They were like, do you want a vibrator? Do you have one laying around? Open my nightstand drawer. Like, do you have one in here you want to use? Like, you know, it was because we were showing up, like it was the freedom to just be our authentic selves. And I found that really beautiful. And I found that really fun. And I found that really freeing, honestly. You could even say liberating. So I'll leave you with that. So maybe this was secretly a sexual liberation episode. I don't know. I really do have that on my mind, huh? Maybe because the Knicks won earlier. I'm just in a really great mood. Who knows? Who knows? But thanks for listening. And if you want to leave me a question, you can do so on my newsletter, on Instagram. You can email me. There's a lot of different ways to ask me a question. I do have a voicemail box set up as well. I have a lot of voicemails to go through, and I will be incorporating them again in future episodes. It is all linked in my link tree on my Instagram or in the description below on this podcast. So yeah, follow me on Instagram too if you don't already. It's at BBIRNA. That's BBIRNA. That's my name, just with two B's. And I am currently sending you all my love from here in DC. And next week, I am heading back to Iceland for a week to teach a really fun lecture and to do a little business trip for me and some family stuff too. So next week, I will be reporting to you there, and I might have some fun guests. Who knows? Yeah, I'm sending you all my love from here in DC. Have a great day or night wherever you are.